So what you're telling me is that frequently there are Canadian-centric Sports Illustrated covers, yeah, and then also American ones.
I realized this in the... And I think I had the same reaction that you did today when I read your piece on Puck Daddy. That's effing BS. When I first realized that, I think it was sometime in the 80s when I was... I remember one time there was an SI cover. I think it might have been like a Philadelphia, Montreal. I can't recall now specifically. It was sometime in the 80s where I saw some hockey cover. And as hockey fans, we've talked about this countless times, you always feel like the underdog and you're looking for the, you know, the SI magic wand to be waved over your sport. Hey, the Sally Field, they love us. They really love us. Hey, they're putting our sport on the cover of their magazine. Isn't this so cool? Only to realize it's, you know, another cover with like, you know, Lynn Swan and the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, as opposed to Guy Lafleur of the Montreal Canadiens. So there's always been that split cover issue with not just SI, but other magazines as well, because... like it or not, and I don't have to like it, you know, you do play to the audience that is going to sell you the most magazines. Just the way it is.
But it makes me mental that, like, okay, so it's PK Subban, who, let's be honest, is a player that maybe isn't that well known to the casual fan, but might be. He's on the best team in hockey. He is a non-white competitor in the National Hockey League, which automatically makes him unique to the casual fan. He's divisive. Mm-hmm. He's interesting, and you have the best hockey writer in the world doing a profile piece on him. And the thing that irked me this morning about this whole thing, and if you don't know what we're talking about, there's a PK Subban cover for Sports Illustrated in Canada, and on the cover of SI here in the States is what really pissed me off, is Jonas Gray, who is this flavor of the week running back for the New England Patriots who set a team record with 4 touchdowns in his debut game. He's had 1 game in the National Football League, and he's on the cover of SI, and instead of PK Subban. And the thing that really pissed me off was they didn't even mention the Subban story on the American cover. They didn't even mention it was in the magazine. Like, that's the difference. Canada is PK Subban lounging around. His whole area is right in front of your face. It's a gigantic picture of PK Subban, and in the States they didn't even put.
It's really a great shot.
They didn't put the headline on the cover of the magazine. Can you believe
that? Like a little swipe at the bottom. Nothing, eh?
Nothing.
Hey, PK Subban, you know, cocky and charismatic, leading the Habs. Nothing.
I don't even think that you could take the letters from the cover of the American SI and spell out PK Subban. Like, that's how careful they were in not even mentioning any of it on the cover.
Okay. A couple of things there. One, I think the main issue there is if PK Subban played on the Chicago Blackhawks, the Los Angeles Kings, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the insert Detroit Red Wings, insert standout American team that has legitimate fan base here, I think they probably would, and they would have done that story
I don't know. Montreal's got cachet, I think. Don't you think Montreal's got cachet with American fans? Like, they know they're like the New York Yankees of hockey at the very least.
I'm the wrong guy to ask. You live in the States. I don't. You tell me, because I don't. And you know what? Maybe I could make the point that you're too close to hockey to see it.
It could
like,
be.
Like, we need to talk to, way more casual fan to really get an idea of how much sports cachet this guy has in the States. All I'm saying this guy plays on the Blackhawks. That cover's getting done.
Away. Well, yeah, and then they will say how he changed. He saved hockey. Like they said, the Blackhawks saved hockey on the cover.
Defense was a dead position until PK Subban saved it. There were no defensemen left in the NHL until PK Subban came and rediscovered it, much like Bobby Orr did in the late 60s.
Maybe we're missing the point here, which is that much like how Buffalo moves the needle for the NHL's ratings on television, maybe Boston moves the needle for SI as far as covers sold, and they put the Patriot on instead of PK Subban, knowing exactly what would happen to sales in Boston if they went with PK Subban. Maybe that's it. I don't know. It's stupid, though.
Listen,
it makes you mental as an American fan because, like, once again, it's like here's the easiest sell you could possibly imagine: controversy. Charisma, the best written piece on Subban that'll ever be written. I mean,
But the problem is you're reaching out to a casual sports fan when you're dealing with hockey in the United States and trying to grab, you know, the most eyeballs and getting the most people's wallets all at the same time. Do people know, I'm talking about casual sports fans, do they know why PK Subban is considered controversial? Is that story, has that story been told yet? I mean, SI is not going to break that story or be the lead, you know, do the Heisman Trophy on it. They're going to be the ones that follow and have the most insightful, thoughtful piece written by the brilliant Michael Farber. That's what right. I kind of expect from SI.
But you have
like
to
the days of like, you know, George Plimpton taking the lead and trying out for the Boston Bruins are gone. They're done. It's over.
Right. Well, for a casual American fan, they assume if he's a black star, he's obviously brash. I mean, that's what they'll assume, the casual American sports fan.
Hey, let me ask you about another thing. And this involves the hockey news. And I kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek, you know, poked fun at Adam Proto, who I have no animosity towards, even though people think that I do.
He definitely has animosity fun at him. Towards me. To put it in cheeky terms, he's the prototypical person that people think that I have heat with. I have one basic disagreement with him about fighting and occasionally some of his other coverage and his sort of bleeding heart kind of sermonizing and shit. But I don't dislike him as a guy. But I think that there are people out there that assume that when I get into these arguments with other writers, I dislike them as people. It's not true. There's only one person I dislike as a person. It's Larry Brooks because he's a dickwad. I mean, he's just a dickwad.
Well, I know
what he did.
I know what he did. I know what he did here. I get it. And I know.
He's literally, like, even Pierre and I have had cordial conversations, but there's only one writer that hates me, and it's Larry Brooks, and I hate him too, because he's a dickwad.
I know. Anyway, so the point about Adam. So Adam put out tweeted a picture of the next Hockey News issue, which looks pretty cool. It's a picture of Jerome McGinley with a busted up eye. It's obviously after a fight. He's got the cut, mm-hmm. and the picture itself has been stylized. I mean, it's a really slick looking cover. Like, as far as Hockey News art goes, man, it's beautiful. And it's the fighting issue, and it's an issue all about fighting. And so I tweeted back to Adam. Oh, so using fighting to sell magazines is okay, but using fighting to sell a sport is evil.
Damn,
and
Adam, that is sub Wyszynski as far as your deviousness on that.
Listen, it was tongue in cheek, and I put a little smiley face beside it because I don't want to get into the bait. I'm too tired of it.
Listen. What? It's just me and you. No one else is listening. No one else listens.
Okay.
It's just me and you.
Okay. All right.
Give me a percentage of the pie chart that was cheekiness versus the percentage 100%. That was really giving a shot. Oh, come on.
No, it was
there wasn't
100%.
A part of you that was,
no,
that
because,
was
no,
striking
because, listen,
back with Thor's no. hammer for all the shit you've taken over the years from him?
No, because when I used to do Hockey Night in Canada Radio, Adam would come on like once or twice a month, and we'd have it got so boring after a while, and we'd have this debate, and we'd both laugh and go for a beer afterwards. It's fine. It's like politics. You go and you tear someone apart, and then, you know, 5 o'clock comes, and it's, you know, Fred Flintstone, yabba-dabba-doo, and you all go to the bar, and you laugh about it, and everything's cool, because you're just having a conversation, and no one should really take these things personally. But Adam wrote back and said, listen, it wasn't my idea for this issue. But then it got me to thinking, you know, there are plenty of writers, and I'll just use Hockey News as an example. Both Adam and Ken are very, very anti-fighting, and are very, you know, quick to judge those, and quick to judge the league. A league that, although it penalizes it very softly and tacitly condones that act in their game. My ultimate question to those writers back is, would you go at your own publication as hard as you go at the NHL by way of criticism for using fighting to sell magazines?
And the answer
I'm not
is
sure
no.
that I'm not – well, I'm not – of course – like, you're not going to bite the hand that feeds you. But in order to remain philosophically consistent, and I know that is hard. Like, hypocrisy is the greatest luxury, and I get that. But we all are to a certain extent. And I understand that, and that's why a lot of this is still tongue-in-cheek. But, I mean, the Hockey News has been having this debate. It's funny, because when I saw the cover, I went back, and I unloaded, you know, those boxes of old Hockey News that I have in the basement. So I'm going through all these, and, man, like, over the last couple of days, every couple of months, there's another story about what to do about fight. Like, it's been going on since. I mean, I've got Hockey News magazines going back to, I think it's 61. And, like, every couple of months, it's what to do about fighting is destroying the game. Yeah. You know, I mean, it changes, it evolves, it becomes its own thing, it rises, it falls.
It's
maybe
so weird.
Going
it's...
out of the game, might be, but it's like, it's been the same conversation with that magazine. It almost leads you to the point where you don't want it to go away, because if you start taking issues away from something that a group has hung their hat on for so long, you disarm them.
But
right?
Is using like so the fighting the, debate, But is using the fighting debate to sell a magazine the same thing as using fighting, is the question. Because essentially they're talking about the debate, right, of fighting versus actually putting YouTube clips of fighting on the site, for example.
Right. Okay. Very. That's a good. And Adam and I have had that one before when I used to do Hockey Night Radio. And I've always said the same thing. Then I don't expect to see a picture of a fight in the magazine. And I don't expect to see a picture of Jerome McGinley's bloody face on the cover. Just put fighting issue and no pictures.
I would be interested to read that magazine only because of what I know of the hockey news. Because what I know of the hockey news is what two of their two lead writers put out there on a consistent basis, which is the anti-fighting. I mean, basically what you're saying is that you express some surprise about fighting being on the cover because your approach to the magazine is that it's anti-fighting based on the stances their two most prominent writers.
Not the magazine itself. Because the magazine, I mean, it changes editorial. Like when Bob McKenzie was the guy at the Hockey News, it had a different timbre.
My assumption based on Proto and Campbell is that is the dogma of the magazine, to be quite honest with you.
No, I never got that from the hockey. I get that from those two writers, and that's their editorial perspective. But I don't get it from the magazine itself because they have never had a problem. I mean, Adam can write – and listen, his heart – I've told this before. Like, his heart's in the right place, and I can't fault a guy for having, you know, people's best interests in heart and at mind.
Right.
But they've always had no problem running a piece with, you know, that Adam or Ken writes, which is very anti-fighting. Yet at the same time, a couple of pages later, showing, you know, Don Selesky, you know, jumping someone from the Minnesota North Stars in 1977. Mm-hmm. Or a picture of, you know, a great brawl that happened the previous week. So it's not as if editorially the whole magazine follows what how Ken and Adam feel about the issue. Those are just two writers in that stable that feel this way about fighting. But
right.
I just found it curious, like interesting. I know, of course, you're not going to go back at your own bite the hand that feeds you, but it just kind of if you're going to go at me and you and the NHL and pro fighting people that hard, maybe have a look at this one. Maybe have a look at what your own magazine is.
Well, it's like, you know, fighting against misogyny in hockey and then having an ice girl on the cover. It's pretty much the same vibe, right?
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah. Anyway. That's magazine talk right now.
speaking of journalists and feuds, Frank Saravelli's on the show today.
Why does everyone think that I hate Frank? I love Frank. He's so entertaining, and I don't miss anything that he writes.
One of the top five most contentious moments on the show was you going after Frank for making Ray Emery a star. First star, I believe.
I wasn't the only one.
In his fight against Braden Holtby.
You should have seen how many DMs and texts I got from Popcorn Row in Philadelphia about that podcast. Tons.
Oh, it was good times.
It was fun.
Good times. Frank's coming on to talk about the Flyers and other things. We also have to talk about the Hall of Fame. Question of the day today is give us your Hall of Fame class for 2015. Punk Daddy, this morning we broke down all of the candidates for the class of 2015. 14 in the books, 15 next year, obviously. Punk Daddy blog at yahoo.com, at Wyszynski, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter, hashtag at MVSW, and then hit us up on the Reddit as well. If you'd like, Frank coming up. We've got enough time for today. So let's start the show proper, shall we?
Really?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Barn fight, barn fight, barn fight.
And Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sometimes I decide I sit in my car and I'm inside of the rush hour traffic and I say, look at this rush hour traffic. I do not want to be in the rush hour traffic.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyszynski.
Hockey Hall of Fame. Ooh, the song. Hockey Hall of Fame last night, the induction ceremony, it went on an endlessly long time, it seems.
Still going on.
I thought
McCurry's still talking.
Pat Burns' kid was great.
So awesome.
Blake's speech is boring. Hasek's speech was great. Forsberg's speech was great. McDonald's went on for way too long, but he had his kids and everything, and there was tears and everything, so I guess we'll just give him a pass for that.
I just love hearing him say, where's Prince Albert? Saskatchewan? What?
Yeah, that was a great line.
Where?
Yeah, that was a great line. Yeah, it's a very, very strong class and the whole thing. Point of contention, by the way, I'm going to write about this later, but I'll talk about it on the show now.
What's that?
Point of contention from a friend of the show, Paul Stewart, on his Hockey Buzz column. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, it's on Hockey Buzz.
It's all right.
We got to talk about it, though. I quote Paul Stewart with regard to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Carey Fraser has no shot at the Hall of Fame as long as Colin Campbell is involved in the process. And Paul Stewart feels the same way about himself. And he feels McCreary got in because McCreary is a company man. Hey, like that.
Well, I think McCreary got in because of the number of big games that he officiated. I can't speak. I've never heard of a grudge between Colin Campbell and Paul Stewart. If Paul says it exists, I have no reason to disbelieve him.
And I guess we'd have to ask Fraser about that as well. But I mean, Fraser of all people should be in the Hall of Fame at some point, right?
Okay, sorry. This is for Carey. Jose, he said about Carey. I thought he said about Paul Stewart. Okay, about Carey Fraser.
He said that Carey Fraser and himself are not going to get in the Hall of Fame because of a feud with Colin Campbell.
Ooh, well. I can't speak to that, but I know there are certain feuds that kept Pat Burns out, and I'm pretty sure that I know who the people involved were. There are certain feuds that people wouldn't let die that have kept people out of the hall. Mm-hmm. And there are certain people certain influential people who have helped get their friends in the Hall of Fame who may not have deserved it. Mm. But I can't speak of Fraser and Stewart specifically because I don't know that one.
Well, keep an eye on that, kids, going forward.
Wow.
Paul Stewart says that he and Carey Fraser won't get in as long as Colin Campbell's involved in the process because of a grudge. Let's keep that in mind in the future.
Grudge? That's one of the reasons why I think all of us, and I think a lot of us, are saying like this should be a little more transparent.
Yeah.
Completely. And I know the opposite argument is, well, then you're not voting your head, you're voting on, you know, how you want people to feel about your vote. But
well, that's the argument with the awards too. The argument with the awards is, well, you know, if we make all the voting public for the hockey writers, how much of this is going to be for show, political, trying to make sure that Zdeno Chara isn't looming over you with his ham fists when you don't put him first for the Norris? That kind of thing, you know, that's the sort of thing you have to worry about if you're going to make the entire process open. That said, I wish the process would be open next year just to hear the words unanimous choice next to Nick Lidstrom, because he will be. And in the class of class of 2015, we have a thing right here that we got to talk about. And it's the fact that we may only have one spot open because Lidstrom is unanimous. Mm-hmm. Pronger is eligible, and you have to imagine that if no one has beef with what's happened to him post-playing days with this contract stuff and working for the NHL and the whole thing, as long as that's not an issue, and I don't believe it will be, he gets in. Sergei Fedorov is one of the best two-way forwards in the history of hockey, so I would imagine he gets in.
Yep.
So that leaves you one spot, which means that in my mind, sir, it's one spot for three players. And these are the three.
All right.
Mark Recchi, Eric Lindros, Jeremy Roenick. Now, there are other choices. Obviously, Andrew Chuck has the numbers, and it's a crime that a man with that many goals doesn't get in. Housley, Cujo, Osgood is as fascinating a case as Lindros in some ways. Kachuk's got numbers. Makarov's got the international thing, but like we talked about the other day, it's not the International Hockey Hall of Fame. It's the Hockey Hall of Fame veering towards NHL Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And then one that I revisited this morning that I probably haven't given enough thought to because I've been so hung up on Lindros.
Angela Ruggiero and Cassie Campbell.
Well, the women will all get in, right? That's Pat Burns on his deathbed said that to his son. He said, it's okay.
It's about time, I know. Yeah.
It's about time they let the women in. Paul Kariya is a real fascinating case, isn't he?
University of Maine Black Bears, played himself some junior in Canada, represented the country internationally, helped put the Anaheim Mighty Ducks on the map, was in elite level skill. Won a gold medal.
989 points in 989 games.
A lot of points, man. That's a lot of points.
50 goal scorer. He's someone that if you're gonna make the Forsberg Burry argument for like Lindros.
Forsberg Burry opens it up for Lindros 100%.
It does, but shouldn't that also open it up for Kariya? as a guy
and then,
who
okay.
dominated and then, but then had his career cut short?
Yep. And then you know what? If we talked yesterday about going backwards and not forwards, like going deeper. Mm-hmm. If that does happen, it also opens the door for Rick Middleton. Hello, mm-hmm. Boston Bruins fans.
That it does. And I'll say this before we get to Frank, I'll say this, because I said this to somebody this morning who was arguing about Lindros and the short career. And all. If Eric Lindros had cancer instead of concussions, if he had the other big C, he'd be in the Hall of Fame right now. I guarantee
he
you
was,
that.
He was a prototypical hockey player who redefined that position. We hadn't seen a big man, with all due respect to Jean Béliveau, move his feet like that until Eric Lindros came around.
We'll get to the fourth one in that big four in a second, but let's talk to Frank. Frank Saravelli is a writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. He rejoins us here on a podcast where the last time he was on, my radio partner yelled at him very, very
seriously. Frank, first of all, Frank, can you – I keep getting these – oh, man, it's a showdown. It's Saravelli and Merrick all over again. I was unaware that there was any animosity between us, because there's certainly not from my end.
Well, I mean, it's kind of long since over on my end. I mean, I'm not sure that I love the 19 questions in a row about this asking the same thing, but I mean, it's completely over. Actually, Greg and I joked about it when we had a beer, I guess, in September during the preseason in Toronto. So, long gone in my book, so.
Yeah, all right.
What about the fact that last week he called you a giant hack? Does that bother you, Frank? Or
no, that definitely doesn't bother.
Okay,
that's
good.
Okay. That's okay, because Frank said I had marbles in my mouth when I'm on television, so we're all even.
Good. Hey, Frank. I know there's not a whole lot of information to share, but what's wrong with Claude Giroux?
Well, I mean, we don't really know quite yet. It's just such a strange kind of happenstance of events here. I mean, we see him at practice yesterday. He's completely fine. He goes start to finish in practice. See him in the locker room after. It's just a regular Monday. He's not really the story of the day, so people are focusing on other things. Like the Flyers' penalty kill, which has given up a goal in 6 out of its last 7 attempts. And all of a sudden, the team tweets last night that he can't make it to a team function because he's being evaluated by doctors. And then a few hours later, we get a four-word or five-word statement from Ron Hextall pretty much saying, Drew's fine, nothing to see here, move along. And then we get to practice this morning, and of course, Giroux is not on the ice. So we're waiting for an update from Ron Hextall, who's at the GM meetings in Toronto. But there are a couple reports out there saying that reporters believe that he has an ankle issue or a lower body injury. But, I mean, the interesting thing that I heard from the Flyers, too, was that when I asked, they said they couldn't rule out an illness either, which is kind of interesting when the mumps are going around the league.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, when you say lower body injury, that does open the door up to the possibility that a cop grabbed his ass really hard. Right? That's a possibility.
Yeah, payback's a bitch. Hey, you mentioned Ron Hextall a second ago, Frank. Is there anyone, considering he won both the Vezina and the Conn Smythe and had a long career and in a lot of ways helped redefine a position that began with Jacques Plante stick handling the puck outside of his crease, does anyone bang the drum for Ron Hextall in the Hall of Fame?
I haven't heard it. You know, I think he started his career with such a bang, like you said, but I think really, I think a lot of people, what lingers with Ron is sort of the last maybe 3 to 4 years that he played, it seemed like he was just kind of hanging on a little bit. His numbers weren't that great. I haven't heard that, but obviously the one that keeps coming up that you guys mentioned was Eric Lindros, and that's sort of been the topic around here in Philly, not just because the Hall of Fame inductions last night, but Eric Lindros and John LeClair are going in the Flyers Hall of Fame together on Thursday night. So that debate has kind of reignited, and It's pretty interesting to see Eric go in 15 years after leaving town, just because I don't think too many people were all that convinced this was ever going to happen with the Flyers based on the way that he left.
I was going to say, Frank, how much of it do you think was Bobby Clark himself coming out and saying things like, well, Eric Lindros belongs in the Hockey Hall of Fame? How much do you think that went, plus what we saw at the Winter Classic a couple of years ago? How much do you think that has changed the mood or the timbre of how Flyers fans feel about 88?
Well, I think I'm not sure that the way Flyers fans have felt has changed all that much. I think he's always been a beloved figure in this town, even with the way that he went out. I think a lot of people, while that whole thing was going on, had sympathy for the way his situation was being handled, from the contract negotiations to the concussions. And I think a few things changed. One, as you mentioned, is Bobby Clark coming out saying that he belongs in the Hall of Fame. And I think if you just look at his numbers, 659 points in 486 games with the Flyers, I mean, those are incredible numbers. 1 point, almost 4 points per game. I mean, he really had a tremendous run with the Flyers. And then, of course, his play with the Rangers and of course, then Dallas and the Maple Leafs dropped off a little bit. But I think the other thing that's changed with Lindros, too, is the way that people view concussions. I mean, and if you think about it, he's really that player that kind of took the brunt of a lot of the criticism when people didn't know that much about them, or they weren't being talked about as often enough. The biggest thing you heard with Lindros was that he's a big baby for sitting out with a head injury or a headache. And right. Certainly no one would say that about any player today. And we actually had Lindros on a conference call yesterday and asked him if he felt like he was sort of one of the pioneers or one of the guys that, you know, is that his legacy, that all these years later, he's the guy that stood up to any criticism from concussions. And he said that he doesn't look at it that way at all, which I found pretty interesting.
Well, but the thing about Lindros, though, and concussions is that as much sympathy as people have for LaFontaine, as much sympathy as people have for other players that have been afflicted by concussion, Correa is another one, I think that people see the way Lindros played as him being the catalyst for his concussions. I don't think he gets the same break as guys like LaFontaine and Correa do.
Is that fair, though?
I don't know. I mean, we all know how he skated. We all know that he thought he could go through NHL defensemen like he went through defensemen in junior. I mean, we know that's true. But I don't necessarily know if it's fair to say, oh, yeah, he's the reason he got his bell rung so many times, when in actuality, it's the way that the league was. I mean, God knows, if Scott Stevens wasn't allowed to hit the way Scott Stevens hit, that Lindros probably wouldn't have had as many concussions as he had.
It's an interesting argument. I mean, I would tend to agree with you saying, I mean, I'd commend him for sort of being that fearless, and perhaps some of it was on him. A lot of people said that he played with his head down a lot. You never really know for sure, but his talent and just like I said, fearlessness going through players and crossing the blue line with that speed, it was nothing really the game had seen before.
No, not at that level. He was, I mean, he had the... I mean, he wasn't as smooth as Mario, but he had great hands. And for a big guy to play that physically, he was almost a combination of, you know, a highly skilled centerman with a power forward's body that hadn't been seen in the NHL. That had at all. That's to
me
like...
Let me throw this to you guys, too. Ron Hextall said this yesterday, and I've been thinking about it and trying to come up with a few better examples, and I haven't really come up with one yet. Since Lindros and Hextall are going in the Flyers Hall of Fame together, how many power forward tandems have been better than those two together? Both
him and the Claire?
Power forwards.
Yeah. No, it's true. That's true. I can't think of one. On the same team?
Forward.
No,
so
I can't think of one on the
wing?
Same team. Yeah. Well, power centers commonplace.
Yeah, and then you throw in Michael Renberg for a little bit of spice on the Legion of Doom line as well, wearing out defensemen. I mean, you look at Renberg to me, it's interesting because he doesn't get, I think, the respect that obviously Eric and John get. But if you ask a lot of defensemen, by the time the third period rolled around and Michael Renberg had leaned on you for two periods, you were freaking exhausted. Like, honestly, Renberg had this great way of tiring out defensemen because he would get the puck down low and he would just start leaning on guys. And, man, that just burns up your legs. By the time the third period came around, we've always heard this in the playoffs. Oh, what you do in games one and two show up in games five and six. Man, what Renberg did in periods one and two always showed up in the third. To me, he's that third member of that line that really doesn't get any respect. But what he did without the puck, to me, set up a lot of things for what Lindros and LeClaire were able to do.
For sure.
Well, I think Lindros and LeClaire certainly didn't forget that. They both mentioned him a lot yesterday in our conference call with them. And
good.
Renberg will actually be in town tomorrow from Sweden for the induction ceremony. So I'm looking forward to talking to him and getting his take on the whole thing. I mean, he had 82 points in 83 games in his rookie season and finished third in Calder Trophy voting.
Moving over to the current day Flyers, Frank. Buffalo, Columbus, Dallas, and Edmonton. What do those teams have in common? They're the only teams in the National Hockey League with a higher goals against per game than the Flyers have at 3.19. The good news is that they're scoring 3.19 per game, but they're also giving up 3.19 per game. So the question that becomes, Frank, is there any chance this team gets better defensively during this season?
Any chance? I mean, short of trading for someone, I'm not sure that that's possible per se. I think the interesting thing is that they've sort of actually been a lot better defensively since they've lost some of their better players due to injury. I mean, perhaps it's just a coincidence. They're 1-3 with Braden Coburn in the lineup and 6-4 without him. He's now back. Andrew McDonald and Luke Shen are very close. They've had to go with a few players of late in Nick Schultz and Carlo Koliakova, who've sort of been fringe NHL players over the past few years, and they've actually played some of their better hockey in the last couple weeks with this team. What happens, though, when you take those two guys out of the lineup and put back in McDonald and Shen? I'm not sure that it's going to get all that much better. I think it probably stays the same. You know, it's just, this is exactly what we thought this team's weakness would be heading into the season, and that's really what it's been, is their play in their own zone. And it's like they can break up plays coming across the blue line and break up pucks, and then they just commit turnover after turnover trying to get rid of it and trying to get the puck up the ice, which has been their Achilles heel through the first almost quarter of the season.
How frustrating has all this been for Craig Berube? Has he changed at all?
I don't think so. He's pretty much the same. I mean, he's been really patient, and I think he's done a pretty good job, actually, of getting the most out of his players. I think Michael Delzato, believe it or not, has been their best defenseman from start to finish so far in the first 16 games. He's been their most consistent, which to me is pretty interesting. And, of course, he's heading to Madison Square Garden for the first time tomorrow night, and I think kind of a good example of Berube is pulling aside Delzato today on the way off the ice from practice and just saying, look, we need the same exact thing out of you tomorrow night that we've gotten so far in these first 16 games. Don't worry about any of the hype returning here. Don't worry about any of that. Just be what you are. And he's the biggest thing that he's stressed with Delzato is playing defense first and then worrying about the points. And he's scored a couple nice goals for the Flyers this year, but he's actually been pretty solid in his own end, which is a change of pace for him for sure.
Interesting. And finally from me, sir, while we have you here, your expertise, Jakub Voracek. Kind of leading the league in goals, right? Points or goals right now? I forget what he's leading in. I think he's leading in
points.
In points, yeah. What's up with that?
What's up with that? It's a huge surprise, obviously. I mean,
Frank, I think what Greg's getting at is, do you think Columbus wants that trade back? He'd look really good with Brian Johansson right about now.
It would certainly look nice. I mean, he kind of displayed some of that talent in Columbus, but never consistently enough, and I don't think he ever had the pieces around him to put it all together. You look back to some of the comments that were made. I think it was Scott Arneal who said, you know, until this guy takes conditioning seriously, he's never going to make it in the NHL consistently as a scorer. And apparently he did that this summer. He finally said that for the first time in his life, he watched what he was eating, which is pretty alarming for a 26-year-old professional athlete, but maybe he's getting it. And that, he said, he trimmed his body fat down significantly. His weight was down 10 pounds coming into camp. I hate to kind of harp on those stories, but through 16 games, when you see such a market difference in a player, I mean, he's on pace for 133 points this season. It's
wow.
Been a ridiculous start to the year for a guy who's never had more than 60. So,
do you think that the Philadelphia media really missed the boat by not labeling him Jakub Voracek before he got in shape? Because I really think that you guys dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, well, Voracek has now turned into Skoracek, so, I mean, it's been ridiculous to watch so far.
Ooh, very good. It's the pun, Attila the pun all of a sudden here. Hey, last one, Frank, for me, and we thank you for your time. Yesterday, four different hockey players from four different countries go into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Which one were you the biggest fan of, or which one impressed you the most?
That's a good question. I'd have to say Mike Modano, just because he did it kind of on his own in some ways in Dallas. He was the guy that everyone was looking at. He had the most pressure on him, and yet he still was able to put it all together. He finally had some help from other pieces when they won the Stanley Cup, but for a while there, it was just him and Dallas, and he really helped put that market on the map. And I think the other thing, I was actually really impressed with the speech from Dominic Hasek that I watched last night. He was a constant thorn in the side of Flyers fans through all those playoff series that they clashed. And I wasn't really sure. I never met him. I never talked to him. Wasn't sure what to make of his personality. He sort of seemed like a strange guy, even in the net. And you always hear different things about goalies. But his speech last night really kind of knocked my socks off in terms of his class and professionalism. And he just seemed like a guy that was really appreciative of the whole situation. So he was the most interesting guy for me to see go in. But most impressive, I'd say, Modano.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Hey, Frank, thank you so much for coming back on the show. I know Merrick was extraordinarily mean to you. He questioned whether you thought that Braden Holtby was a human being, if memory serves. I mean,
I was surprised
you didn't ask about Ray Emery's hot start to the season. I mean,
well, he hasn't beaten anyone up yet, so how impressed can we be? I mean, he hasn't jumped anybody. If he wants to get me to turn my head, he's going to have to jump a goaltender here.
He really only cares about his hot-headed start, not his hot start. You know that. That's all he cares about.
Thanks,
all
Frank.
All right, Cervelli. Thank you, man.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
The great Frank Cervelli joining us here on the potty. Before we get to some answers to the QOD, there's a couple of housekeeping things we have to take care of. First off, it's not official yet. The GM meetings are going on as we speak, but all signs indicate that the dry scrape is dead.
The bad high school date is dead. The dry scrape.
That's right.
Oh, shudders.
Wow, that's great.
Thanks, man. Come on, like you never thought of that? Dry scrape, was this high school?
So basically it's the momentum killing thing that people couldn't get behind. The time that it took to do this thing between the end of the game and the shootout, or the end of the overtime rather, the end of the game and the overtime, sapped the momentum from everything.
It did. And I think we first talked about it the first time we saw it in overtime in the preseason. This is taking too long.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. All the energy is out of the building. Now, for some teams, that's great. Thank you very much. Because if the other team's on a roll, you want to kill that momentum. Well, dry scrape will do that lickety split.
But again, it's just like the logic of it never made any sense, because I mean, if you're playing 4-on-4, you know what generates chances at 4-on-4? Mistakes. Wouldn't you want shitty ice? Like, wouldn't shitty ice make better for overtime and try to make there be more opportunities for bad bounces and things of that nature?
No, because we want 4-on-4, you want to stretch out the ice, and it's hard to make a long pass with bad ice because it ain't going to get there. It's like skipping stones.
Exactly.
Honestly, turnovers. No, the puck goes flying into the corner. You can't make a pass. Honestly, it just makes for bad long passes. I think if you have a 4-on-4 or what the AHL's done with the 3-on-3, all of a sudden you need cleaner ice because you're looking for long bomb passes.
Especially with the 3-on-3, you want bad ice so you get more turnovers, get people coming back the other way 2-on-0. That's what you want.
No, because you kill skill. You're just turning it into a game of flukes.
Oh, die skill. Die and I will take a pillow to skill. I want mistakes. Aren't you the guy who talks about playoff hockey and why it's so great is because mistakes happen the longer you go in the game? And now it's not a perfect game and mistakes are the thing you're looking for.
But you want that to be the human element. You don't want that to be the playing field. You don't want that to be the ice. Okay, you're alone at the side of the net for a tap-in goal, and all of a sudden it skips over your stick like you're Patrick Stephan. No, you don't want that.
Oh,
you want brain cramps. You want, really? Yeah,
How many YouTube hits Patrick Stefan's goal got?
Over to Alashevsky scores. Oh no, I know. You know, I don't want it for the ice. I want brain cramps from the players. I want the surface to be as smooth as possible. I want that surface to have a Brazilian, man. Give me some good passes, nice clean ice.
Like a Brazilian.
No. That's why I like my ice.
I cannot wait for where is it? The Jeff Merrick quote. Twitter is gonna catch that. That's brilliant. The other thing, too, of course, is the big news last night, broke up by Chris Johnston, and it pissed me right off because I had this, too, and just couldn't get the clearance in front of you.
Nah,
was the World Cup of Hockey is going to have all-star teams. And so We know
is
one
that official?
Is going to be this.
Is it official, or is it just something that
the World Cup of Hockey's
about?
The World Cup of Hockey's not official yet.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
none of it's official.
All right, okay.
So one of the plan currently to fill out the last two spots of the eight teams for this 18 tournament is to take all of the European countries that don't have specific teams. So Sweden, Finland, Russia, Czech Republic will all have teams. Slovakia, Slovenia, Latvia, Germany, Switzerland, and others will fall into this catch-all Euro team category, which is great because you want to find a way to get Andrei Kopitar into this tournament. The other team is the real interesting one. So Chris, I had this last night. The two options that they're looking at right now are either a young stars team, which would be players either under the age of 24 or 23. So the spotlight would be on these younger players going up against the Titans of North America. And there's some thought about that being an all-North American team or encompassing young players from across the world. They don't know yet.
Let me ask you a question. Which do you think will produce a more violent game? Here's the question you have to ask yourself. What do players hate more, being shown up by Europeans or being shown up by kids?
Kids.
Uh-huh. Oh, you God, want kids. Violent hockey, man. Put that kids team together.
Kids, 100%. And to that end also, the idea is also, what do hockey players hate more than anything else? Being cut. And so the other option is the North American B team, an all-cut team. Players who didn't make Team Canada, who didn't make Team USA, would band together as a North American supergroup and take on these teams. Now, here's the thing. The reaction last night was really interesting because there are people out there that actually believe this is the World Cup of Hockey. It's not. It's the National Hockey League World Cup of Hockey. It's a stage on which the NHL can put its own product and make its own money, keep all the revenues, and give a giant middle finger to Rene Fasal and the Olympics. That's all it is. It's not the real World Cup of Hockey. Get that out of your minds. It's dead. That doesn't exist anymore. This is the NHL World Cup of Hockey. And so to do it the way they want to do it, which is not to have a Swiss team or a Slovakian team that's going to have a bunch of players from Euro leagues and KHL teams, and frankly, those teams will probably get mud-thumped in the tournament. They don't want that. They want to have an NHL-only product, and the all-star team format would be a way to ensure that's going to happen.
They will still need players, though, from the Swedish Ice Hockey Federation, the Finns, etc.
They'll need a couple of Swedes, but they won't need many. And the Russians.
Mm.
The Russians are the ones.
Dude, there's nine Russian defensemen in the NHL.
Habs have three of them. The Russian team is going to have a very heavy KHL influence. I don't know how many Swedes you'd need. You might need a few Finns. And you might need a few Czechs, depending on who's retired by the time 2016 rolls around. Because
not
God,
Jager.
That national
not Jager.
Team, yeah, that national no team in the Olympics last year, average age was higher than the Devils.
He is keeping that 1990 draft alive. He will not let the 1990 draft die because when he retires, that draft dies with it. He is keeping that alive.
There will always be a player that was in NHL 94 so long as Jager is playing. No, but seriously, that's the thing. Is you got to get out of your heads that this is the World Cup. I saw people that were upset. They're like, how could you have all-star teams in the World Cup? That's not really the World Cup. But just open your minds, broaden your horizons, drop the nostalgia bit, and think about how awesome that would be. To Merrick's point, Canada versus North American kids would be epic. Are you out of your mind? That would be amazing.
Here's the problem. Here's a problem. There are a lot of Canadian kids that would have a hard time playing against Canada.
There would be. That's true. I would agree with that. But you'd have a lot of Canadian kids that would have no problem taking down some of their elders. And keep this in mind, friends.
Hold on.
Think about how deep that Team Canada roster was for the Olympics. Okay, think about how deep that roster was. Now think about this. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid will have 1 year under his belt before the World Cup comes. You think he's making Team Canada? I don't think so. I think he is.
Oh, making Team Canada. Oh, no.
He is raising the battle flag for the Young Stars team.
The problem
is Connor McDavid Young Stars team against Sidney Crosby and Team Canada. Are you out of your mind? It's awesome.
I know. Listen, we're all in an orgasmic frenzy about this, and that's fine. But these kids, all like the elite guys, are going to make this Young Stars team. We're all part of the Hockey Canada, Team Canada program growing up. They've spent their whole lives wearing that jersey. And now all of a sudden you want them to play against that jersey. It's not like the NHL where you just switch teams come July 1st. This is different. This is different for all these kids. Trust me, dude. It is. Now, I know you can say, oh, well, Merrick, I mean, during the lockout, you had, you know, players like, who was it, Marty St. Louis and Joe Thornton and Rick Nash play the Spengler Cup and play for their club teams against Team Canada. That's different. This is the World Cup of Hockey, and this is kids that are growing up in the Hockey Canada program playing against Canada. I'm just saying, it would be a bone of contention for some players playing against Canada. Serious, dude. I love the idea. Trust me, I love the idea. I'm like you. Oh, break it on. That'd be fantastic. I'm just saying, this is a reality of how these kids will feel. Because you know what the question is going to be? How do you feel about playing against Canada? How can you play against your country?
It's easy.
Toe drag that answer. Good luck.
It's a bullshit exhibition tournament. It's not the Olympics.
Oh, just what the NHL wants to hear. Well, it doesn't really matter.
But it's
bullshit.
The truth, though. It's the truth. It's in September. It's a glorified exhibition tournament. That's all it is. It's going to make a lot of money. Toronto's going to be you're going to have more people there for that than you have for TIFF up there. That's saying something.
No, more
but
than
the
Pan Am Games,
that,
that's for sure.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to. But dude, it's not going to be. I think people will play, especially if there's money on the line. They'll play. Yeah. It'll be a fit. But here's the question, right? So obviously the Young Stars jerseys will be a unicorn hatching from an egg. That is their logo, without question. Will the European countries have the United Nations logo or a pirate logo, like a skull and crossbones?
Oh, I love the skull and crossbones idea. I don't think they go for a United Colors of Benetton vibe. I think the skull and crossbones is the way to go. You totally go pirate style.
That's what I like. Yeah. All black uniforms, black head to toe, all black everything, and then the skull and crossbones in the front.
Love it.
That's the jersey right there. All right, you need to get out, to go tend to
sickies.
Yeah,
I got to pick up TJ. I got one sick kid, one that needs to get picked up from JK. So.
The plate of the hockey dad or the dad in general.
And my
all right, any parting words? I'm going
to
finish off with some QOD stuff, but any parting words, sir?
Let's see. No, you know, a few things. I wanted to talk about that Keith Olbermann piece on Gordie Howe. We don't have time today, but I loved it. And man, I don't know whether it's Keith himself or someone on his staff, but I love the fact that he's bringing correct history into all of this. I know it's the geek in me that brings it out, and sure, there's a lot of stuff about that Teeter Kennedy incident that we can talk about. But so far on the Olbermann pieces, what I love is the history's been correct. So. Kudos to Olbermann for the Gordy piece yesterday. Was absolutely gorgeous, and I loved it. Let's park some time to talk a little bit more about 3-on-3 if we can.
Yeah, we're going to hopefully get Dave Andrews from the AHL on this week to talk about the 3-on-3 overtime and what's working. And I'm sure they're going to discuss that at GMs today. I, from what I gather and talking to some people, they won't do anything on it until they've seen a year of it in the AHL. But the early returns are promising. We'll probably talk about that with Dave either tomorrow or on Thursday. Go be with sickies.
All right, got to go be with sick kids. All right. Bye, podcast
there
lovers.
He goes.
Bye.
Trevor Crowell writes in from Hoboken, New Jersey. Who should be in the hall? How about Viktor Tikhonov? It's not the NHL Hall of Fame. Also, Harry Harkimo, who turned Jokerit around in the early 90s and then put his then-wife, Lena Harkimo, as managing director of the club. A lot of love for builders of NHL franchises creating or turning around a team elsewhere. Not so much. That's a great. I mean, you will never see or hear a builder, a GM, a coach from another league venturing into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That's a great point. Peter P writes in. Dave Andrechuk is currently 14th in all times goals scored. You have to go down 67 goals to find a currently eligible player not already in the Hall. That's Mark Recchi, and he's obviously next year. He was eligible this year. First all-time in power play goals, he is the literal definition of front net presence, 640 goals that traveled a total of maybe 650 feet. Frankly, anyone who says Recchi makes me want to puke if they don't have Andrechuk higher. Talk about compilers. Recchi was amazing on Lindros' wing and then a compiler, at all other times of his 20-year career. He played 13 more games than Andrechuk and still has 67 less goals. Andrechuk, for whatever reason, just doesn't have the support. Recchi will. And I think at the end of the day next year, Recchi gets in. I think Recchi's going to be the fourth guy. I think it's going to be Fedorov, Lidstrom, Pronger, and Recchi as the class of 2015. I still think there's a lot of jury out on Lindros, not only because of the attitude, not because and the burn bridges, but because of the longevity issues. Roenick, same stuff. I think people really don't. It's weird because I think they valued the fame component of Bure more than they value the fame component of Roenick, which is weird because Roenick, without question, has the fame in Hall of Fame for sure. So that's a thing that to keep an eye on. Miles T writes in, Lindros should be in the Hall. I don't disagree. I think there's a lot of, you know, as was pointed out by a few people, Lindros is not a slam dunk. You got to make the case for him, but you got to look at the domination of the guy. You got to look at the impact of the guy. And for a stretch in the 1990s, there wasn't a more impactful player, game-changing player, position-defining player than Eric Lindros. Chris Kraft writes in, as far as being worthy of going to the Hall of Fame, if Cam Neely is in, then I think you have to put Lindros in. Neither have a cup. Both have a Memorial Cup. Lindros won the Hart and the Leicester. Neely won the Masterton, although he did not, in fact, die on the ice. Well done. Lindros is not a 50-and-50 guy like Neely, but he represented in Canada a buttload in international play. Neely was not a point-per-game guy, and Lindros is, and ultimately they both had their careers cut short due to injury. My two cents, cheers and belated podcast birthday wishes. Well, thanks. Neely's the comparable. I agree with that. I think as power forwards go, Neely is comparable, and if Neely gets in, it's hard to keep Lindros out. There he is. Again, 1.138 points per game for Lindros, 19th all-time. 19th, top 20 player all-time in points per game average. Now, granted, 760 games, but like I said, you know, I said this to Frank, and I really do believe it. I feel like, unlike LaFontaine, I feel like, unlike Pavel Bure, I'm not Pavel Bure, rather, unlike Paul Kariya, I was looking at Bure's name, sorry, I think there's a sense that Lindros is to blame for his injuries. Now, sometimes it's because of guys like me, who have criticized him for years, are skating with his head down, but it's also because people watched him skate with his head down. Watched him skate right into Scott Stevens, head down across the blue line. Not every concussion the dude had was self-inflicted, but the way he played the game, in my opinion, contributed to it. Now, so did the fact that the rules favored headhunting. Ain't no question it was a different era. But I think that there is that vibe that, you know, whilst there is sympathy for Kariya, whilst there was sympathy for LaFontaine, I don't think there's the same level of sympathy for Lindros. And maybe that's just because of the guy he was, the stuff he pulled as a young player, the stuff he pulled in Philly, the feuds that he had. Maybe it's all that stuff that contributes to that thought. But I've long believed that there is strikes against Lindros for those injuries because people feel like the way he played contributed to it. A couple of guys to mention. Phil Housley has a lot of support. I'm never a Housley guy. I think that he was the epitome of all offense, not a lot of D. But it's hard to ignore 37th all-time in points. That's more than a lot of forwards have in the Hall of Fame. It's hard to ignore that. Curtis Joseph, fourth all-time in wins. Doesn't have a Vezina, never had a Stanley Cup. And on the other side of it, you have Chris Osgood, who is defined by his success in the postseason. One of the best postseason performers at any position in the history of hockey. And 10th all-time in regular season wins. Three cups, two of them were with him as the starting goaltender. Cujo's a tough one. Cujo, without question, was an elite player during his day. Osgood was a vital cog in a machine, but one that you cannot ignore. But was there ever a time you thought Osgood was elite? That's always been the issue, and I know elite is such a kind of a paper-thin word sometimes and could be misused and misapplied and everything else, but some guys got it and some guys don't. I mean, we just saw Dominic Hasek inducted into the Hall of Fame yesterday. You ever going to mention Chris Osgood in the same sentence? He was a very, very good goalie, the perfect goalie for that team, and when you needed it, came up big in the postseason. Is that enough to be a Hall of Famer? It's a tough call. It's a very, very tough call. That Andrew Chuck's not in is a joke. They all come in different flavors, ladies and gentlemen. We talked about that on the show yesterday. For what he did, no one could touch him. 640 goals doesn't get you in the Hall of Fame. 640 goals doesn't get you in the Hall of Fame. The only eligible player in the top 30 goal scorers all time not to be in. That is a crime. I agree. It's a crime. Because he wasn't, I mean, it's not a combine. Who cares how fast he skates? Who cares? 640 goals. I mean, give the man credit for what he was paid to do. Nobody did it better. Nobody did it better. The interesting one for me next year is going to be Sergei Makarov. Because, again, this is the guy who, if you elected him, the stamp would be on the Hall of Fame as it being the Hockey Hall of Fame and not the NHL Hall of Fame, which is a very tough stamp to apply when you look at last night and it's basically an NHL production. It's like the league has taken over the Hockey Hall of Fame. But to speak to the earlier email, it should be the International Hockey Hall of Fame. It should be a Hockey Hall of Fame that encompasses players of all walks of life and from all leagues and all genders. Vyacheslav Fetisov is in the Hall of Fame, not necessarily because of what he did in the National Hockey League, but because of his international career. That said, he had a very good NHL career. Makarov has the Calder. He's like 85 years old when he won it. 384 points in only 424 games. But his international career before coming to the National Hockey League is stellar. And I completely agree. From Russia with Glove has said it. Others have said it. I completely agree that if it's going to be the Hockey Hall of Fame and not the National Hockey League Hall of Fame, then Makarov should be in. Maybe not this year. Pronger, Lidstrom, and Fedorov kind of sucking up all the air. But down the line in a thin year, maybe there's only one obvious guy, another Dino Cicerelli kind of year, I'd have no problem Makarov being in the Hall of Fame. None. Because of what he's done outside the league. But again, that would depend on the selection committee, which is comprised mostly of National Hockey League people, be it executives, former players, writers, whomever, kind of broadening the horizons a little bit and inviting other people to the party. And you know what the problem with inviting other people to the party is? The same problem the Baseball Hall of Fame has had for years, which is when you've become a major tourism event, when you've become a major revenue event, you best make sure that you've got star power. I don't know what the numbers were for the Cicerelli year, but I doubt they'll ever have another year like it. And Sergei Makarov, God bless him, doesn't exactly move the needle. I'm not saying that's how these decisions are made, but I'm just saying, it wouldn't surprise me to see it being a consideration. It's a very cynical look. But I don't think I'm the only one who has a cynical take of the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee. Finally, on the show, I want to mention one more Puck Daddy thing from earlier today. Selly has been banned. Sorry. Selly has been banned. The people have spoken. The vote has been made. Selly, the slang hockey form of celebration, is no more. Banned in 2015. We will not use it on Puck Daddy. We highly encourage you in every walk of your life to not use it as well. It is a childish and stupid term. And you will not hear about sick sellies or wicked sellies or greasy sellies, any sellie on the show or on the blog going forward. Puck Bunnies was second. And I know that at the very least, Jen LC from Puck Daddy is a bit upset that she didn't know how close it was to being the banned word for 2015. But no, it's Selly. Apologies to John Buchagross. Apologies to every brotastic hockey Twitter handle that has Selly in the name. Banned. Please adjust accordingly. That's the show for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to Merrick. Thanks to Frank Saravelli for hopping back on and climbing into the lion's den. for all that jive. And we'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully, Dave Andrews, either tomorrow or Thursday, talk about 3-on-3. Tonight, big... Oh, Kyle Turris tomorrow, says producer Matt. That's exciting. I promise that I won't get too many questions about how Wayne Gretzky as a coach broke his spirit. Because Kyle Turris had the news to, you know, had the nerve to not be Wayne Gretzky. Anyways, thanks everybody for playing along today. And we will speak to you on tomorrow. Oh, and Chris Johnston is reporting that the dry scrape may, in fact, already be dead. I heard it could be dead as soon as this weekend, which makes a whole lot of sense. Because, again, it's a momentum-killing nonsense. And I'm glad it's probably done. All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye. We'll be right back.